A morning. Today's daf including Kuf Mem Aleph. We're in Kuf Mem Amud Beis in the 12th and final parak of Chulin, wrapping up the Masechta. Tomorrow, Mir Tzvah Hashem, we're going to be finishing the Masechta. Friday morning, we're going to be making a Siyam on Masechta. I feel like we're probably not going to be alone in making a Siyam on Masechta Chulin. The 12th parak of the Masechta dealt with the topic of Shiluach HaKein, the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird. The Torah describes how if you see a mother bird in front of you, who is currently roosting on top of her hens, or I'm sorry, on top of her chicks, either her chicks or her eggs. So shalech to shalech esayim v'habanim tikach lach. So you send away the mother bird, and you then take the eggs for yourself or the chicks for yourself. So this is a mitzvah in the Torah. Tomorrow, as we wrap up the parak in the Masechta, so we'll be treated to some agadah regarding the mitzvah. Obviously, this is rich in a lot of hashkafa and machshava. But in the meantime, however, we are dealing with the halacha, and we are going to be discussing, and we have been discussing the last couple of days, some of the most basic halachas as it relates to the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. The topic that we got into yesterday and that we're in the middle of discussing is the fact that both the mother and the chicks have to be kosher. I say chicks, by the way. Chicks and eggs are totally interchangeable terms in this regard. The mitzvah is when a mother is nesting on either the chicks or on the eggs. The chicks have to be really young and immature. Chicks themselves cannot have the capability of flying. That is something we're going to be discussing a little bit later as well. What we are discussing, we're in the middle of discussing, is that both the mother and the chicks have to be a min kosher. They have to be from a kosher type of bird. They don't have to be the same. They doesn't have to actually even be mother daughter, or mother, I should say mother offspring. But they both have to be kosher. That has been established in yesterday's daf in terms of being a trefa. So there we made a distinction. The chicks cannot be a trefa, but the mother can be a trefa. Now what's the difference? So in terms of being, well, truth of the matter is that it's all based on drushas. We learned it out based on a various number of drushas, that both the mother and the chicks have to be a min kosher. They have to be of a kosher type. But in terms of treifa, we also based it on drushas as well. The drushas that arrive us to that conclusion is the fact that the Torah says v'abanim tikach lach, that you are going to be able to personally benefit from the offspring, which means that you can consume the offspring. So that only would work if the offspring is not a treifa. If the offspring is a treifa, so then you can personally benefit from it. You could give it to your dogs, and that is hana, but that's not tikach lach. As far as the mother's concerned, the mother can be a trefa, because what are you doing with the mother? You're sending her away? So that's not a problem. Okay, so this is all the discussions that we had yesterday by Rav Oshia. We are in Kuf Mem Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud, four lines down. Beginning of the line, the Gemara has a lot of questions. A lot of questions by Rav Oshia. Hoshia Adolakan V'shachan Miyosimani Mahu. So let's say as follows. You take your hand, you put it into the nest, and you start doing a shechita on one of the offspring. Miyosimani. You start to cut in, but you don't go all the way through. And as we've discussed now in the first and second parakim of the Masechta, for the mitzvah of shechita to be performed on a bird, so you need to shecht one siman, right? Shnei simanim may be a din lachatchila that we discussed earlier in the Masechta, but certainly the idea is that you need to shecht one siman. If you shecht one siman, but you don't cut all the way through or the majority of the way through, so that's not a shechita ksheira. We are describing a scenario in which you're shechting now one of the chicks and you are now miyot simanim. So you have not hit the 50% mark. You certainly have not hit the 51% mark. Now, what would be the halacha at this point in time? What exactly is the Gemara's question? So Rashi points out over here, is there going to be a mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein? Is there a mitzvah of sending away the mother bird? Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Kevish biyadlig morsa shchita, tikach lach karina bay. So on one hand, you know you can finish a shchita at this point in time. So it is a satisfaction of the Torah's obligation of, or not obligation, but if you will say benefit, of tikach lach, meaning you can finish a shechita, v'chay l'shaleach, and therefore you have to send away the mother bird. That's one possibility. The other possibility, odil mahashtem yekol zman shelo gamar b'em simanim, patim l'shaleach, v'no tel se'im beheter, v'achakach lomer shechita. Or maybe, as long as you have not finished the simanim, now it's interesting, Rashi writes simanim over here, it's a bird, so it only needs one simon, but still, as long as you haven't finished, so you are going to be exempted from sending away the mother bird. Sorry, but yeah, you're going to be exempted from sending away the mother bird. You could, in fact, at this point in time, take the mother bird in a state of heter, and afterwards you can go ahead and you can finish the shechita. That's Rashi's assessment of what the Gemara's question is over here. As we now go back to the Gemara, so on one hand, let's say you were to stop at this point in time. Freeze phrase a moment. So if you were to stop at this point in time now, the bird is going to be a treifa. And as a result of that, the bird's being a treifa. So as we said at the end of yesterday's daf, once the chick is a treifa, there's no longer a mitzvah. Okay? So, and being in lach, v'lo l'klavecha. And the Torah says that it has to be yours and not to your dogs. So that's one possibility. On the other hand, you at least have the potential of finishing the shechita right now. So maybe this is a satisfaction of the requirement of tikach lach, and therefore there is a mitzvah, and therefore you have to send away the mother bird. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. By Rav Yirmiyah, Rav Yirmiyah also has numerous questions. Matlis maushitachus. What if I had some sort of shmata, some sort of rag, separating the mother and its offspring? Meaning the Torah's good description is that the mother is rovetzes al habanim. So she's hovering on top of the chicks, on top of the eggs. So, but what if there's something that separates between the two of them? We're going to start off with a foreign matter. Meaning, as you see these questions progress on and on, we're going to continually scale back to something which is more in nature of the bird. But right now we're going to be starting with a foreign item, and that's going to be a matlis, a shmata. So the Gemara is going to leave this question alone, but then it's going to move on to the next question. But as you see, every question is going to be building one on top of another. Kanafayim mahu. What if the wings are separating? Now we say wings over here, Rashi says, notza telusha, meaning obviously not the wings that are connected to the bird. That's obviously part and parcel of the bird. What we're describing over here is other feathers that are already detached from the bird that are serving as separation between the mother and its offspring. Mahu, shiachotsu. Beitzim muzaros mahu. What if it is unfertilized eggs? The mitzvah in the Torah of sending away the mother bird is only when either the chicks are alive, which obviously chicks are alive, or if the eggs are fertilized, meaning potential life. But if the eggs are unfertilized, so there's no mitzvah of shiluach. What if I have unfertilized eggs separating the mother from its fertilized chicks? Fertilized eggs, I should say. So once again, now we're talking about more organic material. Obviously, the eggs are a product of the bird, and you can say that this is not going to be a chatzitza. You can make that argument. Again, the Gemara leaves this question, moves on to the next. Shnei sidrei beitzim zu agav zu mahu. What if I have two rows of eggs, two layers of eggs, and I want to take now the lower layer? But the mother's not directly on top of the lower layer. The mother's on the upper layer. And we're saying that here the upper layer is, in fact, fertilized eggs and do have chicks inside of them. But right now, I want to take the lower layer. So here you can make even a stronger argument. This is min bimino. This is not a chatzitza. Again, the Gemara leaves this question, moves on to the next. Zachar got...
one is fertilized and one is not fertilized.
Let's just assume that we know the pragmatic issues obviously are important, but the Gemara is right now just conceptualizing in terms of what is and what is not a chatzitza. Zachar agabe beitzim nekeva agabe zachar mahu. Let's say you have a male roosting over the chicks, and the female, the mother, is on top of the male, which is on top of the chicks. So take with all these questions are left to be unresolved. And again, the idea is that certainly the matlis, which is a shmat, it's a rag, so that's obviously the most foreign item to the birds, and obviously the greatest chatzitza, and meanwhile over here we have bird on top of bird, so that obviously would be the least foreign matter. Obviously we're talking about birds over here, and perhaps that would be a chatzitza as well, but again we're going from what is most clearly a chatzitza to what is least clearly a chatzitza. By Rabbi Zera Yonah Beitzei Tassel Mahu, let's say you have a pigeon on top of Tassel. Tassel is a type of kosher bird. It's similar to a yona. So says Rashi. Tassel al beitzei yona mahu. And what if I have the tassel on the eggs of a yona? So we have over here kosher species, and they're both kosher, both the mother and the chicks, and it's just one's on top of the other. And I'm Rabbi Tashmam. So Rabbi says, I think I know the answer. Of tamei rovitz al beitzei of tahor, v'tahor rovitz al beitzei of tamei pater, mishiluach. So let's just go to the Mishnah, let's read the Mishnah, and we'll make a diuk, we'll make an inference in the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes how you have either a kosher mother on top of non-kosher eggs, or you have a non-kosher mother on top of kosher eggs. So there the Mishnah says you have exemption. So that means that all we need to do is just scale a little bit back in the Mishnah. We do this time and again in terms of making diukim in the Mishnah. So what we're going to do is we're going to just move back as just a slow amount. We're turning the dial just a bit. And what do we arrive at? Hatar v'tar chayev. that the only requirements in order for there to be a mitzvah of shiluach hakein is that the mother has to be a kosher type, the offspring has to be a kosher type, but they don't necessarily have to be the same type. So the Gemara says, so what you see over here clearly,
if it's a different species, it's not their mother.
Okay, good. The Gemara's going to push back also. You're good. So, but at least I'm just explaining the diuk right now. So the Gemara is right now assuming that under these circumstances, what we have over here is a chiyuv. So the Gemara says, not necessarily demo bekare. So the Gemara says it could very well be that the diuk is a good diuk, but it doesn't allow us to make all these conclusions. Maybe what the Mishnah is describing over here is we're talking about a kare. Now the kare is some sort of cuckoo bird. Now, I say cuckoo bird, by the way. Truth of the matter, I know it's funny. I say cuckoo bird. So Rashi, at one point in time, described the kare as being a cuckoo bird. If I could find the Rashi, it would be even that much more exciting. Rashi, I know he's out there. So, okay. I'll spend another time finding the Rashi. But anyway, the point of the Gemara is as follows. There is this type of bird, it's called a kare bird, and again, probably mispronouncing it. This kare bird is its natural predisposition is that it nests on top of other birds. This is what it does. And so therefore, I'm going to borrow an expression that we saw earlier in the Gemara, orche bekach. This is normal, this is natural. Under those circumstances, one can make the argument that that's what the Mishnah is describing. When you have nature acting in its nature, in its natural state, where you have this type of bird that normally rests and broods over other types of birds, so there we could say that there's a chiyuv. But if we have something which is, as far as nature goes, is really unusual, and you have one species sitting on top of another species of birds, another type of chicks, and this is something that doesn't normally happen, so maybe I'll make the argument that there wouldn't be a chiyuv. So basically, the Gemara is pushing back at the diuk. Kari zachar. So here we describe now where you have this male kore who is sitting on top of the chicks, and a machlokes amongst the tanaim whether or not there is or there is no chiyuv. Now, I'm Rabbi Abba, my time is Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara says, now what is the basis of the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer? So Asya Degira Degira. So he's going to be learning out from Gzera Shava. Now, whenever we have Gzera Shava, so the typical Gzera Shava min haTorah is when I have a pasuk in Chumash, and I have it linked, hyperlinked to another pasuk in Chumash. Good. Sometimes we'll have a Gzera Shava where I have a pasuk in Chumash being hyperlinked to a pasuk in Navi, and that's unusual and that's strange, and generally speaking, what you expect is Rashi to say something along the lines of, this is not a bona fide Gzera Shava, this is a, what we'll call a Gilui Milsa. It's just a Navi helping us define what the Chumash is saying. Here, you have perhaps the most unusual type of Gzera Shava, and that is from one pasuk in Navi to another pasuk in Navi. Okay, I wish I had the numbers to support my thesis, but this is highly unusual. I guess I'll be more sensitive to it and see if we can discover this again. But we have now a Gzera Shava linking Pesukim from Yirmiyahu to Yeshayahu. Siv hacha kare digar velo yulad. So the word dagar, Rashi over here points out, is basically a collection. So kare digar velo yulad. And Ksiv Hasim Uviko Udagira Bitsila, and another pasuk in Yeshayahu also describing a similar, using the same word. So what comes out over here is that the Kore Dagar is in fact it's normal, it's natural for it to rest and brood on top of chicks. So Amar Rebbe Lazar, okay, good. That is the pasuk that supports the opinion of Rebbe Eliezer. So even though you have a male bird brooding on top of the chicks, but because it is the Kare Zachar, and because we have Pesukim and Navi that describe that this is normal, natural behavior, so as a result of that, we are arriving at a Chiyuv. This is the opinion of Rebbe Eliezer. Amar Rebbe Elazar. Okay, so to try to make this as clear as possible, this is Rebbe Elazar the Amora, qualifying the Machlokes Tanayim, of which one of the Tanayim happened to be Rebbe Eliezer. Machlokes Bekore Zachar V'Bekore Nekeva Divrei HaKol Chayev. So if it's, let's say, the female Kare, so under those circumstances, you'd be Chayev. To which the Gemara says, isn't that obvious? Meaning, isn't the whole reason why there's a debate is because it's not a mother, it's a father? So, pshita. So, kore zachar tanan. In fact, you read the Mishnah, of course they're arguing about kore zachar, and presumably, if the kore was a female, then of course he'd be chayev. So, ma'u detema rabbanan afil kore nekeva patre. So, the Gemara says, well, maybe no. Maybe the chachamim would exempt even if it was a kore nekeva. And again, we're describing a scenario in which it is brooding on not its own chicks, but on some other chick. And maybe the only reason why the Mishnah chose this particular example is just to highlight how strong Rabbi Eliezer feels. That even if though it's a male, but because this is normal natural behavior, supported by nature, supported by Psukim and Navi, so therefore you'd be chayev. So kamash malan. So that is what I might have thought. So Rabbi Eliezer wants to make clear that no, they're really arguing about the Kari in general. The Kari bird that is nesting on top of other birds. So it could very well be that whether it's male or female is not significant. The fact that it is nesting on top of other birds, so we have a machlokas between the Tanaim, whether or not there'd be a chayev or not. I'm sorry, Igadamri. Now we have that Aleph over there. The Bach says that what we're going to add in our Gemara is the word Igadamri, because clearly we're going to be seeing another version of what we just saw. Igadamri, V'amar Rebelazim, Machlokis Bekori Zachar. The debate is regarding Kari Zachar of Bezachar Da'amah Divrei Akol Pater. But let's say it wasn't the Kari Zachar, it wasn't this male cuckoo bird, but it was another type of male bird. So there, no debate. There, everyone would say exemption. So Pshita Kari Zachar tonight. Now the Gemara says, now again, isn't that point obvious as well? Look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah is pointing to the Kari Zachar. So Ma'u Detem Rebbe Lazar Filo Zachar Da'amah Mechayev. So the Gemara says, well, maybe here's how the Mishnah is to be understood. Really, Rebbe Lazar says that any male bird nesting on top of the chicks or the eggs, there'd be an obligation. Why do you point to the Kari Zachar? So Rashi over here points out, because that's what normally happens. Meaning, if you're ever going to see this event where you're going to have a male bird resting on top of chicks, it's generally speaking going to be this Kari Zachar. But as far as Rebbe Lazar is concerned, it would be true by any male bird nesting on top of chicks or eggs. The Hadikani Kari Zachar, Alo Dicha Kocha de Rabbanan. And as far as the Mishnah choosing this particular example, is just highlighting how strongly the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Lazar. Because Rabbi Lazar says that I don't care what kind of male bird it is, and I don't care if it's the Kari Zachar, which its nature is to do this. All this doesn't matter to me. If it's a male bird, there's no obligation. Kamash Malan. Tayinamiachi Zachar Dama Pater, Kari Zachar. The Gemara now is going to bring down a brisa supporting the Sikadarma, the second version, where if it's just a male bird in general, so then according to everybody, there's going to be an exemption. There's not going to be a mitzvah, and only in the case of the Kari Zachar of this male cuckoo bird, then and only then is there a debate between Rebbe Lazar and the Chachamim. Rebbe Lazar says Yechayv, the Chachamim say Yepater. And again, the argument for Rebbe Lazar is one, you had those psukim in Navi that speak to this idea that the Kari Zachar does this. And number two, it's normal. It's natural. It's natural for the Kari Zachar to be nesting on top of its chicks or its eggs. And so therefore, there would be an obligation according to Rabbi Eliezer. Mishnah. We are on the Mishnah Kuf Mem Amid Beis. Haysam Ofefes Bezman Shekenafer Nogos Bekan Chayev L'Shalech. Ein Kenafer Nogos Bekan Pater M'L'Shalech. The mother has to be on the eggs. That part's clear. In terms of a preposition, so the Torah actually speaks with tremendous clarity. The Torah gives a description where the aim is Rovetzes al Habanim. So we know that the mother has to be on the eggs. That part's clear. But obviously there's a birds and birds can fly. All right? You're getting that first here. I'm reporting. So the... the Mishnah wants to know, well, what if, let's say, the mother is on the eggs, but not resting on the eggs, not sitting on the eggs, but hovering over the eggs. Now, it's interesting that the Torah actually uses a term that's somewhere in the middle. The term of the Torah is ha'em rovetzes al ha'efrochim o al ha'beitzim. The mother is rovetzes. Now, rovetzes, what does that mean? It's a little bit unclear. Meaning, we know it's on, or in other words, so we know directionally the mother is over the eggs, but does that mean sitting on the eggs? Well, I'll tell you what. If the Torah wanted to say the word sitting, the Torah has a word for that, and that's called yosheves. And if the so, what if the mother is, let's say, flying on top of the nest directly over? So the Mishnah says, well, it depends. If there's contact between the mother and the egg, so then there's going to be a chiyuv. If there's no contact, then there's not going to be a chiyuv. Okay. Ein sham ela afroch achar beitza achas chayv l'shalech shenemar. Cain, mikomakom. So, and you'll forgive me as I keep flipping back between Kan and Cain, right? The Torah is Shiluach HaKan, but that only means that when it's connected to the word Shiluach, we know for sure it's Kan, but it could be in of itself, it's Cain. And I don't have a definitive Mesorah, so I keep flipping back and forth. forgiveness. Anyway, if there's one chick or if there is one egg in the nest, that's enough to elicit an obligation of Shiluach HaKein. The Torah says Kain Kain, and that means that if it's just even one egg. This should sound familiar. We saw this already, this halacha, that it, we saw being brought down in a Tosefta on Kuf Lamites Amud Beis, but that's a Tosefta. This is the Mishnah. It's the same point. Hayusha Mefrochim Mafrichim O Beitim Uzaros. If, let's say, the chicks are able to fly on their own. And so even though it's still in the nest and still enjoying its, you know, its young adult life, but it could fly on its own. Or if the eggs are unfertilized. In either one of those cases, patur l'shaleach. So then there's no longer an obligation. Shenem Ravaim, Ravetzes Ala Frochim Ola Beitzim. The Torah describes how the mother is hovering over either the chicks or the eggs. And the Gemara says what we have over here is classically a hekesh. So obviously the chicks are alive, so too the eggs have to be potential life, meaning it cannot be unfertilized eggs. And yatsu muzaros, I'm sorry, b'nei kayama, yatsu muzaros. Uma beitzim shrichim le'imam, af efrochim shrichim le'imam, yatsu mafrichim. Similarly, just like the eggs need their mother, needs the warmth and needs the mother to be there, so too the same thing with the chicks. If the chicks already can fly on their own, so they don't need their mother, they just kind of like hanging out in the nest, right? But they don't need their mother, and so as a result of that, there's no longer an obligation. So a hekish in both directions helps us arrive at the conclusion that if the eggs are unfertilized, no mitzvah, and if the chicks can fly on their own, also no mitzvah. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with a brisa. Ravetzes v'lo me'ofefes. So it has to be ravetzes, but not me'ofefes. Now, me'ofefes means flying. And ravetzes means, let's just say, sitting on top of, for now. So yachlo afilo k'nafen ogas b'kanta malama ravetzes. Now, well, let's say it's flying on top of, but you have contact. I might have thought that there's an obligation, tamalama rovetzes. No, that's not enough. Meaning it has to be physically sitting on top of the nest and on top of the chicks or on top of the eggs. Now, at this point in time, it's good to be confused right now. Because at this point in time, we learned in the Mishnah that if there is contact, there's going to be an obligation. Stay tuned. We're gonna wonder. So my tamudim and delok siv yosheves. Now, over here, I'm sorry. No. I jumped ahead a little bit. Okay, sorry. Everything I said is correct, but not here. It's going to be correct in the Braisa. Let's do this again. I'm going to start again from the Gemara. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Ravetzes v'lo me'ofefes. It has to be over and not flying. Yachla afilu k'nafeh no gos bekan. I might have thought. Okay, this much better. I might have thought that if it's flying above, but and there's contact, that there's no obligation. Tanu Rabbanan ravetzes. So the Torah says ravetzes. Ravetzes means that if it's flying over, but there's contact, then there's an obligation. Good. This actually works out exactly like we learned in the Mishnah. Good. My Talmudah, the Gemara wants to know, how exactly do we arrive at this conclusion? Midalok siv yosheves, because the Torah doesn't say yosheves. Right? And this is the point I made back in the Mishnah. Meaning ravetzes is a little bit looser than yosheves. Yosheves means it has to be sitting and fixed on top of the chicks or on top of the eggs. Ravetzes, a little bit above it. So what does that mean, a little bit above it? Like we described. It's resting. It's not sitting on the chicks, but it's over the chicks. It could be flying over, but there has to be physical contact. Good. I'm reviewed on Marav. Haiso Yoshev is Ben Shnei Rov De Ilan Roin Kol Sheim Tishamei No Fellas Alehem Chayev L'Shalech V'im La Pater. The Gemara brings down a ruling of Rav that was brought to us in the name of Rav Yehuda, and that's as follows. Let's say the mother's over the chicks. But it happens to be right now that the nest that she made, there's a couple of branches that are directly over the nest. So she's sitting on the nest, but quite frankly, she's sitting on the branches that are on top of the nest. And so now she's sitting on her nest, but she's not directly over the nest. And is there going to be an obligation, yes or no? Now, just a little bit earlier this morning, we talked about chatzitza serving as a break between her, the mother, and the chicks. And over here, sounds like this is not going to be a chatzitza. Why the Gemara didn't bring this up earlier? Fair question. I don't have an answer. But in the meantime, here's what we know for sure. We know for sure that Rav says that under these circumstances, you would be obligated. Why? Because if I were to remove the branches and the mother would just simply, and the mother would slide directly down, so the mother would be directly on top, and therefore, there's an obligation. So this is the psak that's given down by Rav Yehuda Marav, and the Gemara is going to challenge. Meisvei. Based on a brisa. If let's say the mother is in the nest, sitting between the eggs, so the eggs are by her side, but not underneath her, so there's no obligation. Al gabeim chayav l'shalech. If the mother's on top of them, then there's going to be an obligation. Now, let's say she's flying above the nest, and even though she's touching, there's going to be an exemption from the mitzvah of shiluach hakein. Okay, now I can say it, and now I can say it correctly. What we just learned in the second half of the Braisa, that's confusing. It goes against what we learned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said very clearly that as long as there's physical contact between the hovering mother and the nest below, there's going to be an obligation. What we just learned in the Braisa is that even with physical contact, there is no obligation. Okay, so we have to resolve that, but we're not going to resolve that immediately. However, what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the first half of the Braisa, and what did we just learn together? That if the mother's in the nest sitting alongside her eggs, so then there's no obligation. But on top of the eggs, there is going to be an obligation. Now, let's read the Braisa carefully with a diuk. My love, presumably. Al gabehem dumi de beneim. Ma beneim de nagabahu. Af al gabehem de nagabahu. So, the two examples given in the Braisa, they pretty much have to mimic one another. The side has to be just like on top. Or I'll say it better. The top has to be just along the sides. Ma beneim de nagabahu. Meaning when the Braisa is giving a description of the mother being in the nest, being next to her eggs, we're going to assume that there's physical contact. She's touching the eggs. And the Braisa's point is, still there's no obligation because she's not on top of. So, afagabem denagabahu. So the same thing is true when she's on top of the eggs. So that means to say that she's on top of the eggs and she has to be physically touching the eggs or the chicks. But if she's not, meaning if she's on the branch that's directly over the nest, then there's not going to be an obligation. Avarov de ilan potter. Now, if all we said is correct, so then, obviously, this is difficult, because Rav Yehuda Amar Rav told us that there would be an obligation under such a circumstance. So the Gemara says, lo, al gabeim dumi demeinayim, abeinayim delo naga alayu, afa gabeim delo naga alayu, vahinu Rav de Ilan. So the Gemara says, no. In fact, I'll tell you what the Braisa is coming to teach us, that when the mother is sitting alongside her eggs, and it's not touching the egg, so then there's not going to be an obligation. Masha Enkin, if I put the mother over the eggs, even though she's not touching the eggs, but as long as if you remove the branch, she would fall directly on top of the eggs, so then there would be an obligation, and then this would be a support for Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Hachinami Mistabra, and I'll tell you what, this makes more sense. Because Isakadacha Rav De'ilan Pater, because let's start off learning the Braisa with the assumption that her being on branches over the nest is an exemption. Let's start with that assumption. So adni haisamu fefes afilu kenafenogos bekan patul mishalech lisnei rov de ilan. Meaning, if I wanted to give a bigger chiddush, here would have been the biggest chiddush of the Braisa. Don't give me the case where she's flying over the nest with a little wing touching her chicks. Give it to me stronger. She's actually sitting over the nest, and the only thing separating her from the nest is just going to be some branches. But she's sitting, and the Braisa says under those circumstances she be pater. That would be the bigger chiddush. Why is that a bigger chiddush? Because she's sitting, she's nesting, and even still, there would be an exemption. If the Braisa wanted to teach us a bigger chiddush, that would have been the bigger chiddush. V'kosha came ofefes, and certainly if she's flying over, then for sure there would be an exemption. So the Gemara says, I don't agree. Mofefes itzirich le'dafil kenafen nogos bekan patum l'shaleach. So the Gemara says, no, I still think that the hovering over, the flying over the nest is still much of a chiddush. Why? Because she's flying over, but she has a wing touching the chicks. She has a wing touching the eggs. So there, yeah, physical contact. So let's go over. She's over the nest. She's physically touching the nest. I would say that there'd be an obligation. So the Gemara says, I think that this is still a bigger chiddush. To which the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Now that we got the Braisa all clear, or mostly clear, I should say, now let's deal with the basic issue. The Braisa and the Mishnah don't agree. What would be a scenario in which she's hovering, she's flying over the nest, directly over, and she's making physical contact with the chicks or the eggs? In our Mishnah, we learned obligation. In the Braisa, we learned exemption. And the Gemara now is going to raise exactly that question. So the Gemara says, well, no. The Braisa is talking about a case where she is touching the eggs, but not the top of the eggs, but the side of the eggs. And so now we're being super technical over here in terms of what triggers an obligation of Shiluach HaKein. She has to be over the nest, and she has to be flying over the nest, she has to be touching the eggs or the chicks, but she has to be touching the top of the eggs or the chicks. If she's only touching the side, then there will be an exemption. Igadarmi, the Gemara brings down this same discussion, but just from a different angle. But all the points we're going to be making are the same points. I'm going to be going rather quickly over here. We start by just quoting the Braisa again. The Braisa, if she's sitting between the eggs, there's going to be exemption. If she's going to be on top of the eggs, there's going to be an obligation. If, let's say, she is flying over the eggs or the chicks, and she is touching, there's going to be an exemption. So we just repeated the Braisa. So my love agabem do debeinayim. My beinayim de lo naga alayo af agabem de lo naga alayo v'hainu rov de ilan. And in this version, we're going to start with the assumption that when she's sitting between the eggs, she's not touching. And that means that when she's over the egg, she's not touching. And yet, she's over the egg, she's not touching, but she's sitting on branches over the nest, and there's going to be an obligation. And this is a support for Rav Yehuda Merav. Okay. So, lo. The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. So, no, could very well be that the Bryce is talking about a case where she's sitting alongside the eggs and touching. She's sitting on top of the eggs and touching. And sitting alongside the eggs and touching, exemption. Sitting on top of the eggs and touching, obligation. But that means to say that she's sitting on top but not touching, i.e. either a branch is separating, so then that's an exemption. So, So the Gemara makes the same point that we made previously. This would seemingly be a bigger chiddush, that she is sitting on branches over the nest. So she's over the nest, she's in a sitting position. It just happens to be the branches are separating. That's the bigger chiddush. Why didn't the Braisa say that? So the Gemara says, Because the flying over is still a bigger chiddush, because even though she's not sitting, but she is flying, she is over, and she's touching, and the Braisa wanted to tell us that under those circumstances, there would still be an exemption. The Gemara says, okay, but now that we're here, how about comparing the Braisa to the Mishnah? I know we did this already, but this is part of the Ikedarmi. This is just all part of the second version. Our Mishnah says that she's flying over the nest and she's touching the eggs or the chicks. There's an obligation. The Braisa says exemption. And again, the same distinction that we made previously. Previously, we talked about where, in the Mishnah, we're talking about where she's flying over the nest and she's touching the top of the chicks or the top of the eggs. Obligation. Masha Enke in the Braisa is talking about where she's touching the side or of the chicks or the eggs. Okay. Ein sham efroach or ein sham ella efroach echad. We learned in the Mishnah that there's a mitzvah of shiloh ha-kain, even if there's only one chick, or even if there's only one egg. Now, I added the word ella as per the directions of the Bach. Ema ibcha, ein sham ella afroach, ella echad, o beta achas pater. Why don't we arrive at the following conclusion? If there's only one egg, or there's only one chick, so really there's an exemption, pater m'shalech, no obligation in the mitzvah. And for a very strong reason. You read the pasuk in the Torah describes how they're either chicks or eggs. Clearly, the Torah is giving it a plural. And so, we could just simply say that the only obligation lies in where there is multiple chicks or multiple eggs. I know the Torah repeats the word cane multiple times. Maybe that comes to tell us that even if the eggs aren't fertilized, or even if the chicks can fly on their own, there's going to be an obligation. Let's put it in other terms. The Torah gives us a miyat, the Torah gives us a ribui. What we amplified is that that even if it's one chick or one egg, there's an obligation. But what we excluded is if the birds can fly, if the chicks can fly on their own, or if the eggs are unfertilized, then there's no obligation. The Gemara's question is very simple. I have an amplification. I have a limitation. Why don't I just flip it around? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Imkei nechsov kravayim ravetzes alehem. So if that were true, if you were right, so then what the Torah should have said is that the mother is hovering over them. My vayim ravetzes ala frochim ala beitzim, la kushe efrochim la beitzim la beitzim la efrochim. The fact that the Torah wants to say chicks and or eggs is because the Torah wanted to create that hekesh. That hekesh is what is the objective of the Torah. So there, because the Torah says both Ephrochim and Beit Simson, now we have a hekesh. And now we're going to arrive at the following conclusion. Eggs only if they have a chicken side. Why? Because the Torah says Ephrochim o Beit Sim. Just like the Ephrochim obviously are live entities, so too the eggs have to be potential life, meaning they have to have a chicken side of it. And conversely, just like the egg needs its mother, so too the chicks need its mother. Good. So that Hekesh now allowed us to arrive at that conclusion. Now that I know that, so that's no longer on the table for discussion. That's off limits. And now that the Torah gives us an amplification of kan, of the multiple, of the repeated word of kan, so there that allows us to say that even for one chick or even for one egg, there would be an obligation of shiluach hakein. We are up to the next Mishnah. Shachar v'chazar afilu arba v'chamisha pa'amim chayev. Let's say you send away the mother bird four or five times. Upon its return, you're still obligated to send it away again. Shenemar shalech tishalech tishalach esa'im. Because the Torah gives us that double lashon that you should send it away. Now, generally speaking, if you're reading the pasuk without a halachic view, halachic mind, which, as far as the Gemara is concerned, why would you do that? Although that's not totally true, right? Ain krayos emidei pshuto, meaning the simple pshat of the pasukim. So what you would say is that the Torah just simply means you should surely send it away, right? Probably, if you look at the Aristotle translation, he probably writes language like that. You should surely send it away. But as far as the halachic mind is concerned, shalech to shalach means you should send it away multiple times. Now, let's just go over, I don't know if you've ever seen, been, or experienced the mitzvah. What typically happens is that a person's going to encounter a nest and see that it's got a bird hovering over its chicks, and you have an unbelievable opportunity of this mitzvah, shiluach hakein. So what you're going to see people going to do is one person's going to send it away, pick up the eggs, but of course he doesn't really want it, and put it back. And then comes the second person, he's going to do the same, the third person, and he's going to do the same as well. And everyone's going to fulfill the mitzvah of shiluach hakein. Okay. The Mishnah is not describing that. Meaning the Mishnah over here is just giving a simple description of one person who is actually trying to send away the mother bird, but this mother bird is, understandably, she's a mother to her chicks, a mother to her eggs, so immediately after you send her away, immediately she comes back. And so what the Mishnah is describing over here is a much simpler case where one person is trying to send away the mother bird. And the mother bird keeps coming back. And the point the Mishnah is making is, well, it's not that, well, I tried once and therefore the mitzvah is no longer there. No, the mitzvah continues to be there.
Each one was cleansed?
Right. That's a great question. I don't know the answer. The question is each time I now considered like a new mitzvah? Or is this just a continuation of the original mitzvah? Don't know. But Ha'amar harini notel esayim ha'mashalech esabanim. So, let's say as follows. Let's say that the person makes the following declarative statement. I'm going to take the mother, and I'm going to send away the chicks. So, under those circumstances, chayev. You have not taken away the obligation of the mitzvah. Shenem ha'shalech t'shalech esayim. Meaning, even though you have the mother in your hand, you're thinking to yourself, well, look, here's what I did. I ignored the Torah. Not only ignored the Torah, did the exact opposite of what the Torah wanted. Torah wanted me to send away the mother bird and then take the chicks. And I have full intent and plans now to take the mother bird and go home with the mother bird. So to that, the Mishnah is telling us you haven't lost your mitzvah opportunity. And as long as you have the mother bird in your hand, you could still send away the mother bird and still fulfill the mitzvah. Now, Talos Abanim V'echziram La V'achaka Chazra'im Aleihem Patim L'Shalech. Let's say you take either the chicks or the eggs, and you return them back to the nest. And afterwards, the mother bird comes back. At this point in time, there's no longer a mitzvah. Why not? Rashi explains. Because, I'll read the Rashi inside, Patam L'Shaleach, right? There's only one Rashi in the entire Mishnah. The Kevin de Natal Es HaBeitzim, Havalei Kan Mezuman. So Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Because once you pick up the egg or chicks in your hand, so at this point in time now, it belongs to somebody. It's owned to somebody. It's owned by somebody. When he returns it back to the nest, this is no longer a chance opportunity. This is no longer happenstance. This is now an egg that's actually owned by somebody. And so therefore, it loses the quality of an eino mezuman, meaning this is one of the first rushes we made in the perek, ki kare kansipor lafanecha. You happen upon a nest, meaning both the mother and the chicks were ownerless. At this point in time now, there is a mitzvah opportunity. Once the mother is acquired, or the chicks or the eggs are acquired, no longer there's a mitzvah opportunity. Okay, and so anyone who's going to attempt to do the mitzvah of shiluach hakein, so important note, which a lot of people don't know, understandably. In other words, but we're learning the perek right now, so we're going to be more educated. An important note. For the first person who does the mitzvah, Shiluach HaKein, so he's not going to keep the eggs. He doesn't really want the eggs. He's going to put the eggs back in the nest. So you have to be mafkir those eggs. You have to be mafkir the chicks. Usually it's going to be eggs. It's not going to be chicks. But you have to be mafkir. You have to declare them ownerless. Because if you don't declare them ownerless, you run right into this Mishnah. The Mishnah says that once you take the eggs and make a kinyan on the eggs, and then you put the eggs back in the nest, so at this point in time, there's no longer a mitzvah. Because the eggs now are owned.
Why is it in Mizuma?
Why is it?
Yeah, if you already took the eggs. Yeah.
That's exactly what isn't that what? I just got confused. What just happened?
Once you've acquired the eggs, right?
Yeah.
Then just putting it back, you cannot do the mitzvah again.
That's exactly what the Mishnah says.
Because it's Mizuma.
Right.
Question: when you put it back and you offer it, the mother bird has to come back for the next person. Or
of course. The mitzvah. If the mother bird doesn't come back, then there's no longer a mitzvah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay.
It says binding, right?
Huh?
It says binding. So how could you be fulfilled
with one? Right. In other words, right. The Torah says beitzim or frochim.
But that's two.
Right. So the Gemara previously said, even though that is the Gemara put that out on the table, but the Gemara took it back. The Gemara took it back because again, the only reason why the Torah gave us that kind of language is because for the hekesh purposes. But you're right, though. A simple reading of the Torah would indicate that it has to be multiple eggs or multiple chicks. But the Gemara rescinded that possibility. We start with the Gemara on Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, and we're immediately after the Mishnah. As far as the double language of the pasuk is concerned, maybe the Torah just simply means the following: send it away once, that's shaleach, and send it away a second time, tishalach, and that's it. I comes back again. Okay, you struck out. I understand. Usually three strikes and you're out. So maybe, but two strikes and you're out. That's it. No longer a mitzvah. So amalei shaleach afilu me'apamim. So he says, no, you don't know how to read a pasuk in the Torah. When the Torah says shaleach, the Torah at that point in time says send it away. Period. And when I say period, I mean by that, that's the objective. The objective is to send it away. So even if the Torah would have just stopped at the word shaleach, at that point in time, how many times should you try? An infinite number of times. Meaning just keep sending it away. Afilo me'apamim. Even 100 times. Okay, right, I was generous today. I went with infinite. But even 100 times. And that all would have come from the word shaleach. What do we get from tishalach? So tishalach ain li ledvar harshus, ledvar mitzvah minayin. So the Gemara says, well, what if I have the following consideration? Let's say that it's a dvar rishos, meaning there's no other mitzvah right now on the table for discussion. But let's say there's a dvar mitzvah, meaning right now that mother bird, I could do a mitzvah with that mother bird. If I were to take it right now, I could do a mitzvah. So now I have competing mitzvahs. I have one mitzvah of sending away the mother bird because of the mitzvah shiloach hakein. I have another mitzvah. I haven't identified it yet. I will in just a moment. I have another mitzvah if I take the bird. So now what do I do when I have competing mitzvahs? So under those circumstances, tamalam tishalach mikom akom, that's the second tishalach to tell us that the mitzvah of shiluach hakein is going to trump any other mitzvah. Okay. Now let's take a moment identifying what could possibly be another mitzvah. Why would there be a mitzvah to take the mother bird? Okay, so I'm open for creativity, but at the same time, however, I know the upcoming Gemara, and I know the Rashi, so I'm going to go with what the Gemara is going to present in front of us. What would be another mitzvah opportunity? So let's say you have Taras and Mitzorah. I need to purify a Mitzorah. So we know that part of the purification process starts off on day one with two birds. And so I need the mother bird for the mitzvah of Taras and Mitzorah. Now, it's interesting, by the way, because sending away the mother bird, that's the mitzvah currently in process. Taking the mother bird for the mitzvah of Taras and Mitzorah, it's a Hechsher mitzvah. Right, I'm not doing the mitzvah yet. I just need it for another mitzvah. So I'm acknowledging that it's not exactly the same, but let's put it right now on even footing with one another. So right now I have a choice between those two mitzvahs. So what we're learning together right now is that the mitzvah of shiluach is going to trump the mitzvah of whatever other mitzvah there is. So the Gemara says, interesting. Amalei Rabbi Abba b'reid Rav Yosef bar Rav l'Rav Kahana l'atam d'kaz rachman t'shalach halav hachi havamino l'dvar mitzvah lo. So the Gemara says, now, we are right now thinking that one mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein versus any other mitzvah, and Shiluach HaKein is going to win. And we had the other mitzvah would have won, but we have a drasha. The Gemara says, even as a Havamina, it's not a good Havamina. Why not? Included in the mitzvah of shiluach haken, you really have two things going on. You have one, not to take the mother bird, and two, send her away. This is what's called a lav and an asay. So whatever I have going against it can't possibly beat the mitzvah of shiluach haken, because included in the mitzvah is both a lav and asay. So even if I have a competing mitzvah asay, it's not going to beat this. So lo tzricha da avra v'shakla la'im. The lav avrei. So the Gemara says, you're right. Meaning your point is excellent. Let's consider the following. Let's say you took the mother bird. You didn't send her away. So at this point in time now, the lav is gone. The lav is gone. Now, in of itself, by the way, is that true that the lav is gone? We're gonna push back on that in just a moment. But right now, I'm just reading the Gemara. The Gemara says the lav is gone. Now that the lav is gone, the negative prohibition is gone. So what's left? Just the positive commandment of sending away the mother bird. Sending away the mother bird, that's one asay, versus whatever other asay there is. I'm going to go back to the example of Tyrus HaMitzorah. So there now, it's just one asay versus another. So, I'm sorry, asay hu di'ika. So, leisi asay v'litchei asay kamash malan. So I might have thought that now that I'm reduced down to just the asay of shalech to shalech esayim, and now it's competing against another mitzvah, without a drasha, I would have said the other mitzvah would have won. Good. That's what the Gemara is suggesting. To which the Gemara says, you offered a position which, quite frankly, is controversial. You said that the lav is gone the moment you take the mother bird. I don't think you're right. And the Gemara said, well, it's not that I don't think you're right. This is subject to a machlokas. So the Gemara says, point number one. Point number one is, we have to go back to the end of Masech Demakos. And in the end of Masech Demakos, we talked about the following. Whenever you have a negative prohibition that can be rectified by a positive commandment, let's use the example of gzela. I steal something. So here, I just violate a law in the Torah. And what do I have? I have an opportunity to undo that which I did. V'heshif is a gzela. Return the lost item. Sorry. Return the stolen item. Okay. So now, I violated the law of gzela. Now, gzela happens to be, for our purposes, not the best example, because you don't get malchus for gzela. Just stay with me, because it's a really simple example. And aside from the fact that there's no onus, there's no punishment, the example is very good. And it works to make the point. So I steal. So I violated the law. And now I could still rectify that which I did. I can undo that which I did by simply returning the lost item. Okay. When exactly does the law continue? Does the law continue until the point where I rectify? Or the law is violated right away? And it happens to be that I also have an opportunity to rectify that which I undid. And this is a machlokas amongst Amarayim in the Gemara at the end of Makos. Machlokas Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish over there. And the way the Gemara phrases it is either kimu velo kimu versus bitlu velo bitlu. The language over here is just simply, there was a brisa over there. What was a nusach brisa? Either you read the brisa as kimu or lo kimu, or you read the brisa as bitlu velo bitlu. See the Gemara Makos for a much better and clearer presentation of the Machlokas. For our purposes right now, it's very simple in terms of how it plugs in over here. You took the mother bird. You violated the law, right? Not necessarily. Meaning, if you understand that the law has not yet been violated until you lose the opportunity to rectify it, so that means to say that the law has right now not been completed, it's not been concluded. The only time that you're concluding the lav and formally violating the lav is when I can no longer rectify that which I did. Over here, as long as I have an opportunity to send away the mother bird, so the lav yet is still on the table. On the other hand, the other way to look at it is no. The moment I take the mother bird and don't send her away, so then I have now completed violating the lav is gone, and now all I'm left with is an opportunity to rectify it. So when the Gemara proposed moments earlier, oh, you took the mother bird for yourself, and you violated the law, and the law is gone. Not necessarily. That's predicated on the machlokas in the Gemara Makos. That's point number one, says the Gemara. Visu the Rav Yehuda damar shalech mikara mashma afilo asein amileka. And the Gemara says, you know that according to Rav Yehuda, which we are going to clarify a little bit later on this morning, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the mitzvah of shaleach is already from the very beginning. When you get to the nest, you already have a positive commandment of shalech to shalach. I mean, according to Rav Yehuda, the mitzvah shalech is not after you have taken the mother bird inappropriately, incorrectly, but rather the moment you arrive at the nest, you have a mitzvah shalech. So if that's true, so that means to say that once you take the mother bird, so then you don't even have a mitzvah sese. So basically we have two very basic issues on the table. So ela ama marber of ashi kigoshen ela ama nasla shalech. Delav ika, delav leka, asehu deika. Oh, so the Gemara says, okay, you're right. So let's reconstruct the scenario, and the scenario looks now like this. I take the mother bird, not because I want to take her for myself. I'm literally picking up the mother bird to send her away. Okay, now, if we were just to freeze frame the moment right now, as you have the mother bird in your hand, with the intention of sending her away, so you have not violated the law. The law in the Torah is, don't take it for yourself. I didn't take it for myself. I took it to send it away. The law now is off the table. What is left on the table? The positive commandment of shaleach, of sending away the mother bird. And now, if there's a competing other asay, like Taras HaMetzorah, so under those circumstances, now which one's going to win out? Without the drasha, I would say the other mitzvah would win out. So v'leisi asay de v'litche asay. Good. That is all the Gemara's suggestion. And the second tishalach comes to tell us that the mitzvah of shiluach hakein is going to win. The Gemara says, so interesting. My ome dehay asay mehay asay. So the Gemara says, look, even in the now refined version of the discussion, and even as we have now cleaned up the entire question, the Gemara says, let me ask you a simple question. I have one positive commandment, I have another positive commandment. What makes one more compelling than the other? Meaning you said that without a drasha, I certainly would have said, oh, the Taras HaMetzorah, oh, that's a much bigger deal. Why? I have Taras HaMetzorah, that's a positive commandment. I have Shalech to Shalech HaSayim, that's a positive commandment.
Right.
It's a push.
Right.
And that's an excellent... Okay, fine. And an excellent point. I really like it. I kind of alluded to that earlier. But the Gemara's question is very simple right now. What would make a more compelling argument for one mitzvah over another? So the Gemara makes a compelling argument. Look, how important is it for a husband and wife to get along and for there to be shalom bayis? So Akash Baruch Hu says, here's what you could do. You could take my name, write it down on a piece of paper, and erase it. Obviously, what the Gemara here is describing is the process of the sota, where once she is a sota, so now husband and wife are prohibited to one another. Again, all the details, not for now. But they're prohibited to one another. And then, under certain circumstances, they're going to go to the Beis HaMikdash, go through the sota process, including that process is the erasing of the name of Hashem that's written down on the cloth. And under normal circumstances, we do not erase Hashem's name. But for shalom bein ish leishto, for shalom bayis, we do. Over here, Taras HaMetzorah, that's shalom bayis. Why? The Gemara is about to point out. Because while he's a Metzorah, so he's not allowed to be with his wife. Only through the purification process of the Taras HaMetzorah, so he can be with his wife. So you're asking me the question, so why would Taras HaMetzorah have been more compelling than that of Shiluach HaKein, shalom bayis? The Torah says that he's going to be sitting outside his tent for 7 days during the time where he's sequestered. Oh, halo zuishto, and that means that he can't be with his wife. He can't be with his wife, a mitzora. So and so now the Gemara says, I can construct a very strong argument that Taharas Mitzora should be a more significant mitzvah, a more pressing mitzvah than that of the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, because it creates shalom bayis. That's the Havamina. It's a great Havamina. The drasha of Shalech Tishalach tells us that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein is going to override the mitzvah of Taras HaMetzorah. And now that you heard the Havamina, then you have to wonder, so then why is Shiluach HaKein going to be stronger? Good. That's for the Balei HaMachshava to explain. And I'm not one of them. But it obviously requires an explanation. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. We're continuing on Kuf Mem Aleph Amid Aleph. Hanotel Aim Al Habanim. Let's say you take the mother bird. Rav Yehuda Amar Loka Veinu Mishalech. So Rav Yehuda says at that point in time, you just blew it. You blew it in so many regards. So number one, you missed a mitzvah opportunity, tremendous mitzvah opportunity. But number two, according to Rav Yehuda, you violated the law of taking away the mother bird. And at that point in time, Malkus. Okay, you know, you violated the law of the Torah. Because the Torah says, don't take the mother bird for yourself. And that's exactly what you did. Now the Chachamim are mishalech vein aloka, and the Chachamim say no, meaning what you did is bad, but you're not going to get malchus. Why? Because according to the Chachamim, this is a classic example of lav hanitak laaseh. That yes, you violated the law in the Torah, and then the Torah says, and there's a way to rectify. How do you rectify? It's very simple. Send away the mother bird. So is that klal? In fact, kol mitzvah lo saseh sheish bo kamaseh ain't looking alav. This goes back to the basic rule we learned back in Malkus, and now we're reviewing it right now, and that is alav hanitak laaseh is not subject to Malkus. Okay. The Chachamim's position, so easy to understand, so easy to present. What does Rav Yehuda hold? I mean, we know what he holds. You're going to get Malkus. Is Rav Yehuda arguing with the entire principle? Does Rav Yehuda, is Rav Yehuda of the opinion that even though Allah and Itak say you're going to get Malkus? According to Rav Yehuda, you stole something. That's it, you're going to get Malkus? Is that Rav Yehuda's position? Or maybe it's specific to our mitzvah that you're going to get Malkus based on, well, we're going to see in just a moment. So by Rabbi Abba Bar Mama, time of the Rav Yehuda Mishum Desav Alav Shein Itak La'asei Elokein Alav, the Gemara asks exactly this question, meaning I just set us up. So on one hand, one way to understand Rav Yehuda, it's a fundamental debate. Rav Yehuda holds that you're going to get Malkus for Alav Shein Itak La'asei. And Odilma Ba'alma Sever Alav Shein Itak La'asei Elokein Alav. Or maybe no, it's not fundamental. He agrees with the Chachamim Alav Shein Itak La'asei, you're not going to get Malkus. V'hacha Hayn Itayma Mishum Dekasever Shalech Mikara Mashma. And over here, it could very well be that according to Rav Yehuda, the mitzvah saseh of shalech to shalech esa aim is not the Torah rectifying something which you did bad, but rather it is instructions the moment you encounter the nest. The moment you approach the nest, the Torah says shalech to shalech esa aim. So it's not an essay to correct and rectify the lav of you took the mother bird for yourself, don't take the mother bird for yourself, but rather it is the positive commandment that exists at the moment you arrive at the nest. Tashma. And if that's true, then obviously this is what Rav Yehuda is arguing, is that this is not an example of lav hanitak laaseh. Tashma. The Gemara says, well, consider the following. And that is a brisa. Ganav v'gazlin yesham b'chla malkus, div Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says that if you're a ganav, you're a gazlin, you're subject to malkus. Oh. So it sounds like from this brisa, it's a fundamental debate. Rav Yehuda says you're going to get malkus for lav hanitak laaseh. We know that stealing is a classic example. Allah v'nitak laaseh. The Torah says, "Don't steal," and the Torah also says, "Aheshiv is exela," and return the stolen item that you stole. So shema mina time at the Rav Yehuda Mishum Dekasav Allah v'shinitak laaseh lokin alav. Okay, there's nothing more to talk about. Correct. So Amar le Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera says, "Do me a favor. Don't ever do that again. Don't do that again. Don't do what again?" Don't quote an unverified brisa, right? You have a brisa that you want to quote that's going to support a position. It has to be verified. So, Amrei Rabbi Zera, Lava Min Alchul Kol Masisa Delo Tanya Bei Rabbi Chia Bei Rabbi Oshia Mishabeshtahi. You have the brisas of Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia. Check. They're good. Those are verified brisas. Those are brisas that you can ask from. You ask from a brisa that you got from somewhere else, from other source, no good. And you want to talk about an interesting Rashi. I underlined it, but like, it's really interesting. Rashi writes on the top of the Amud Beis, Rabbi Chiyav, Rabbi Yoshia, Siduous Abraises, V'diktigu B'divrei Kol Chacham Lamar Kamosha Amar. When Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Chiyav wrote down the Braises, so they checked, they double checked. They made sure that they were precise in the way they wrote it. Aval Yesh Tanayim Harbei, Rashi writes this. I'm not embellishing. But there are many Tanayim, Shemosifim al Mishnasam bididami, and there are many Tanaim who, when they hear something and they're writing it down, they're recording it as a brisa, as a Tanaitic statement, so they ad lib. But in other words, God forbid, meaning they don't do so just with no intent whatsoever, but that what they think is also comparable. Kihacha, just like over here. Mishum deshamin l'Rabbi Yehuda achli mechayv savri tamim mishum lav shenitzel lasei lo ken alav v'osif alamar ganav v'gaza. Meaning, some Tanaim, so what do? They saw our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda says you're going to get Malkus for taking the mother bird for yourself. Ah, it must be that Rav Yehuda holds that a lav hanitak laaseh you're going to get Malkus for. And so what they do? They embellished. So they said, well, if that's true for one lav hanitak laaseh, it must be true for another as well. And so you have Tanaim who basically now write their brisos based on what they think is a comparable situation. But it's only based on a erroneous understanding of the very premise of what Rav Yehuda is founded on. And so, who only gets verified checks for giving us good and authoritative brises? Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yoshia. That's it. Dilma, back to the Gemara. So, Mishabeshtahi, back to the Gemara. I should have finished reading the sentence, but not too late. Veloso sivamina, be midrasha. Don't bring any other brises into the brise medrash. You only bring in brises of Ravoshi and Rabbi Chiyan, that's it. Dilma ina b'cha malchus rabbayim. In other words, you're not going to get malchus for stealing something because Rabbi Huda agrees that you don't normally get malchus for a lavani teklase. Tanya. Tanya, Tashma. The nibra of Oshia of Rabbi Chiyah. We are discussing right now the mitzvah of Peah. Lo sashuv vishav. Lo sechale vechale. Yesh to mechala malchus rabbayim div Rabbi Yehuda. So if, let's say, the Torah's clear instructions for your field is don't finish harvesting the field. Leave a corner of the field for the poor. And what did you do? You left a corner. You didn't leave a corner of the field. You finished harvesting your field. Rav Yehuda says, Malchus. So Malchus, what do you mean? It's not too late. You can take the produce and give it to the poor. So the Gemara says, isn't that going to be a clear indication that Rav Yehuda does in fact say you're going to get Malchus for a lavan teklase? So and again, the Gemara says, no. Rav Yehuda fundamentally says, you're not going to get Malchus for Labadin Taklase. Why by pay are you going to get Malchus? Because when the Torah says, Ta'azov, you should leave the field, that's not instructions of the Torah of, what if I don't leave the field? Oh, then Ta'azov, then do it. That's not a lav, that's not the assay that's rectifying the lav. That is, when you approach a field from the very beginning, Ta'azov. That's not a positive commandment correcting that which you did wrong. That is primary instructions of what you're supposed to do. Leave a corner of the field for the poor. This is not an example of lavani teklase. Just like over here in Shiluach HaKein, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the shalech teshalach is not a Torah's instructions of, oh, you did something wrong, here's how to rectify it. No, it's when you originally approach the nest, send away the mother bird. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi Tashma. Okay, so the Braisa over here writes really clearly that if you leave over an Oser, which you're not allowed to do, uneaten carbon the next morning, well, sometimes next morning, sometimes the next evening, depending on what kind of carbon it is, but if you leave carbon over beyond its allotted time, so that is leaving over an Oser. And Rav Yehuda says you're not going to get Malchus. Why not? Because you could burn it. And the Torah says, if you leave over an Oser, then you burn it. This is a lavani teklase. And Rav Yehuda writes, and therefore you're not going to get Malchus. Case closed. Rav Yehuda does not disagree with the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda holds that in general, lavani teklase, you're not going to get Malchus. Shema mina, tamid Rav Yehuda, mishum dekasev, shalach mekara mashma, shema mina. So what can we say conclusively? That according to Rav Yehuda, he agrees. You're not going to get Malchus for a lavani teklase. It just happens to be here by the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, and we can add, by the mitzvah pay as well, the positive instruction, shalech teshalach, is not the Torah telling us, oh, you made a mistake, here's what you can do to correct. No. Shalech teshalach is the original mitzvah's essay when you originally approach the nest. Good. And therefore, if you violate the lav, there is no backup assay, and therefore, according to Rav Yehuda, you're going to get Malchus. Okay. Let's just do just a couple more lines as we finish off this sugya. Amle Ravidi l'Ravashi masnis namideka. You want to read the Mishnah carefully? It's right there in the Mishnah. Diktani anotol eim al habanim. Rav Yehuda omer loka ve'ino ve'in mishalech. Oh, Rav Yehuda says you're not. I'm sorry. Rav Yehuda says two things. One, you're getting malchus. Two, ein mishalech. Now ein mishalech. Now let's think about that. You don't send away the mother bird now. Isa kadachatam to Rav Yehuda lav shini taklasei loke alav loke u mishalech mi bayelei. I don't understand. Shouldn't you a get malchus and also have to send away the mother bird? Meaning, if the correct understanding of shalech to shalach is that it's there to rectify that which you've done, so rectify. You took the mother bird for yourself? Okay, good. Shalech to shalach, send it away. Oh, and it happens to be that Rav Yehuda also says you're going to get Malchus. So clearly, but that's not what Rav Yehuda said in the Mishnah. Why not? Because clearly what Rav Yehuda is holding is shalech to shalach is not the Torah's addressing the person who violated the law, but rather, this is what you do when you originally get to the nest. Send away the mother bird. V'dilma hachi kamar b'mas nisan. Ein niftar ad demalkin le. The Gemara deflects. The Gemara says, well, maybe what the Mishnah means is that, look, even if he sends away the mother bird, right, we're not yet done with him. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're still going to bring him to Beis Din, we're still going to give him Malchus, But you could understand that the Mishnah means, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to have to send away the mother bird. You could read the Mishnah like that. It's not a simple reading of the Mishnah, but the Gemara just simply is deflecting. It's just pushing back on the proof. Ad Kan, we're going to stop over here today, finishing up the discussion of kosher and non-kosher mothers and eggs in terms of the mitzvah. Anything separating the mother from the eggs would be a chatzitza, maybe, maybe not. A series of questions the Gemara asks. The mother is not sitting on the eggs, but hovering over the eggs, flapping over the eggs, but making physical contact with the eggs. Another big discussion in the Gemara. The repetitious nature of the mitzvah, sending away the mother bird 4 or 5 times or even 100 times. The relationship between the positive commandment of sending away the mother bird and the violation of the Torah of don't take the mother bird for yourself, and how these two connect with one another. Is it a lav hanitak laseh? Is it the negative prohibition, but the Torah gives us a way to rectify? Or, the way Rav Yehuda presents it, is it an aseh mikara? Meaning, is it a positive commandment from the very beginning? And then another very big discussion in today's daf is that when I have two competing aseh's, so which one would trump which? In general, it's a push. But in our particular scenario where I have the mitzvah shiluach hakein against the mitzvah of taharas ha-metzora, I have to send away the mother bird to fulfill one mitzvah, keep the mother bird to perform another mitzvah, which trumps what? So the drasha tells us the mitzvah shiluach hakein would win out, even though mitzvara, the mitzvah of taharas ha-metzora, should win out because that creates shalom bayis.